This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
We are at my favorite place and the favorite of a lot of people over many generations. We are at an estate that's the place where Frank Lloyd Wright's grandparents settled when they emigrated from Wales. Unitarian minister, they had six children, farmers, the boys, teachers, the girls. And it's the place where Wright worked on the farms with his uncles when he was a boy, and he kept coming back to for the rest of his life. He moved here full-time when he was in his mid-40s to start a new life. He said, an unconventional life. A modernist who purposefully went back out into the country to build his home, Taliesin.
What's really fascinating to me is anybody that can visualize a Frank Lloyd Wright structure. To me, it's synonymous with futuristic Buck Rogers, incredible streamlined, aerodynamic, you know, reductionist, simple elegance. Something that if you saw a Frank Lloyd Wright building go up today, you would see it as being cutting edge. And yet, Frank Lloyd Wright was born in 1867, is that right?
Right, just after the Civil War.
2 years after the Civil War. Of any generation, Frank Lloyd Wright's generation probably spanned the most incredible breadth of development in America.
Yeah, America wasn't even 100 years old yet. I think that American culture was seeking its identity. They were still working out what it was they were going to be. They were looking for it in all the arts, and Frank Lloyd Wright was looking for it in architecture, like others were all around him. Chicago had had a great fire and was being rebuilt, and so Wright, he didn't want to live in the country when he was young. He wanted to get to the city, and he did make quite a name for himself. I think it's interesting you said the futurism is what you recall, and I recall that too, but he lived a ripe old age, and a lot of that futuristic stuff you saw in the more sophisticated times in the end of his life, particularly in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. But I think one part of the reason he got away with it, and it was both futuristic and so livable, is because the roots were so firmly planted in a view of nature as being benevolent, a thing of great beauty, nature as being your best friend, someone when no matter what's happening in your life, you can go and be with nature. Nature was Wright's God, his friend, and he thought basically the source of human values, almost like Thomas Jefferson. If you could be close to nature, an agricultural character of life, why, they would just bring so much value to a person's life.
But he palpably and physically and hands-on transmuted that philosophy into function, into living spaces. Tell us some examples. Here we are at Taliesin, which is his home, and he exemplified that in his work.
Yeah, you're right. Taliesin is the name of his home, and he also gave the name to the whole estate, which kept growing over time, and sometimes he added to Taliesin buildings that he had designed earlier in his life for other people, his family members, a school for his aunts, a home for his sister, a house for himself, and later a barn that served the entire estate. So when he was 18, also, he worked as a draftsman on the family chapel. So if you count that among the buildings, why, that's seven buildings designed by Wright. But at Taliesin, boy, was it a radical departure, even from the prairie school work that he and others had been doing earlier. It sort of fits in these hills so naturally. It's a stone house with wood shingle roofs. The scale is very human. Wright talked about the human scale. Rather than feeling like you have an inferiority complex when you walk into a grand cathedral, he was trying to think of the scale that would make the human being feel at home and natural. It's called Taliesin, the first natural house.
Let's jump back in time to his roots as an architect in Chicago, because he was blessed to partner and work with the inventor of the skyscraper, basically.
Right. Louis Sullivan, he called Liebermeister, because he had such a profound impact on Wright's work. You know, it wasn't the first architect he worked for in Chicago, but it's the one that really taught him everything he felt he needed to know. Both he and Sullivan, when they were children, learned the new invention, kindergarten, that his mother found at a World's Fair. And it was about teaching children the laws of nature through geometry, the shapes, that I figured that if you could learn the vocabulary of nature, why, you could string it together and in the man-built realm have something that seems to fit in the natural realm. Sullivan had those ideas. But Wright thought that Sullivan was too ornamental. And Wright stripped away a lot of the curlicues and stuff that Sullivan did, and then really branched out onto his own, and not just residential work, but commercial too.
Contextually, at that time, that was the Gilded Age. You know, that was ornamentation and fenestration and detail and whatnot. So that's what's mind-blowing about Frank Lloyd Wright, in that he was gutsy enough to strip all that away.
Yeah, you're right. And he evolved in that realm. He had some very wealthy clients, particularly early on, and he certainly gave them gingerbread. But it was his own variety, and he liked to talk about integral ornament. One of the ways that he found that was through a kind of a patterning that what you'd find in the structure, but also in the ornament, but he called it structure pattern.
When you say pattern, is it repeat motif?
Right. He said structure pattern is integral ornament, nothing more than structure pattern made more visibly articulate. I think if he said that if the structure of the building creates a pattern, then that pattern also becomes the ornament of the building. So he might accentuate that with an ornament, maybe a dental, maybe a trim, piece of trim, or a piece of trim that follows all the way around the building or around down the stairs.
But it seems no matter what he did, it was purely this minimalist, reductionist signature.
That's true, but not as minimalistic as, say, the International School.
Right.
He had made such a big splash in Germany when he traveled there just before he came to build Taliesin in about 1910-11. It gave birth to a whole school that embraced the cantilever, a lot of open space, very similar to Wright's work, but Wright said it captured the forms of organic architecture but lost the soul. And so for Wright, things like local materials used in an artful manner, or ornament of different kinds that articulated a pattern that related to its context. I think he felt that was really essential.
Site orientation. Talk to us about that for a moment.
You're right. So if the site was beautiful, natural in his eyes would be beautiful. So, for example, at Taliesin, we have bands of windows that wrap all the way around the house in a way that hadn't been done before. But let's say you lived in an urban environment, or maybe in a manufacturing district, that the view out the windows maybe would not be natural. And so he would create art glass, and that would be a geometric abstraction from something of the natural site, so that the interior space and the view through the window would create the ultimate atmosphere. So it was very contextual. With some of the Usonian homes, he would purposefully have certain windows facing north to get a certain diffuse daylight, and only open up to the south if you had the correct overhangs or if you had the right plantings in front of it, in front of the windows to shade it in the summer, but let deep sunlight in the winter.
You were mentioning geometry in kindergarten, and that's something that consistently, wherever you go through a Frank Lloyd Wright structure, wherever in the country, it's triangle, it's square, it's circle. As simple as that.
You're right. A lot of his buildings are either square footprints when you look at them or rectangles. He favored a rectangle that was made of two squares side by side, which they call a root four rectangle. And just by having the whole building, whether small or large, organized on this simple unit, it would have an inner rhythm of form. And the patterns would be organized much like music. And just that organization became part of the soul of the building.
Talk to us for a moment about experiencing Taliesin and some of Frank Lloyd Wright's other structures here in Wisconsin.
Well, good idea. So outside of the Taliesin estate and the seven buildings he designed here, just west of us at the tail end of the Frank Lloyd Wright Trail is Wright's birthplace, Richland Center, Wisconsin. And in the period of the 1920s, from which not a lot of his commercial work was built or survives, there's a wonderful warehouse built for a regional successful man. That's a really interesting work, brick building with a concrete frieze that almost looks Mayan. So that's worth traveling out in the country to see that. But on the other end of the Frank Lloyd Wright Trail, starting in Illinois, you go to Racine, Wisconsin, and the great administration building for Johnson Wax, in which you have these thin dendriform columns supporting a lily pad-like structure overhead with Pyrex glass tubing that allows the light to pour in, and you almost feel like you're in a grove of Carnauba palms. And then 10 years later added that research tower that almost looks like Buckminster Fuller's 4D tower, an inflatable skyscraper. And it does seem like it's inflated with those glass tubes around the outside and the floors floating inside. Apparently they invented four kinds of aerosol products that helped to build Johnson Wax into the company it is today. Raid, Glade, and a couple of other aerosol products. But beyond that, there's in Madison, the Unitarian Meeting House, in which there's a great meeting hall that almost looks like two hands pushed together in prayer on a diamond, a triangular shaped unit inside, and all the furniture fits the triangular unit. That's really a knockout building. And of course, the Monona Terrace, big commercial building that was built after Frank Lloyd Wright's death, but he had designed it originally in the 30s and several other times trying to adapt it into people of Madison.
That was site specific for Madison when he envisioned it.
Yeah, Madison is an isthmus city on two lakes. And so the Capitol is on the center of the isthmus and has this beautiful white dome. And so Frank Lloyd Wright basically took the dome of that building and laid it down horizontally to on the edge of the lake with the same white color and a large arc over the lake with big, beautiful arched windows. And it kind of connects the state Capitol building to the lake in a really graceful and beautiful way. And people like to go inside and look at the great photo exhibit they have of Frank Lloyd Wright describing principles of organic architecture through a series of photographs of his hands arranged in different forms, explaining concepts of structure and space.
And then there's some other Frank Lloyd Wright structures.
There are a number of private residences, which it's great to go and check out the exterior. There's also in Wauwatosa, near Milwaukee, an interesting futuristic-looking Orthodox church called Annunciation Greek Orthodox, and it's similarly a dome. It's a thin shell, like an eggshell concrete dome, which because of the expansion and contraction necessary, they had to come up with a clever way to have the building meet the walls. And so they came up with the idea of a trench around the top of the walls filled with graphite and ball bearings, and that's how it accommodates that extreme expansion and contraction. I think the most important thing about Taliesin to know is that it has this tremendous character of place of a beautiful physiographic province, the Driftless area of southwest Wisconsin. It's an area that's famous now for ecotourism. People come out to go to the national parks to fish in the beautiful cold water trout streams. And for the art scene in a lot of these towns, old mining towns, the lead and zinc days, towns of hand-carved stone. And here's Taliesin out here, surrounded by beautiful countryside. This place that through its abstract stonework and its amazing spaces, people have a pilgrimage to from all over the world. I think it's really worth the trip to Taliesin to enjoy the Wisconsin River, the creeks, Frank Lloyd Wright's dam, and the beautiful waterfall at Taliesin. It's just like nothing you can imagine.
The website.
TaliesinPreservation.org. Taliesin Preservation is a Wisconsin-based nonprofit formed in 1990 so that we could steward both the architecture, to conduct historic preservation, and to fill the buildings with life through public access programming, tours, architecture camp for kids, concerts, and so much more.
Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be with you.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Wisconsin, where we've been visiting with Eric Flash at Taliesin.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.